If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports game world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, January 10th, 2014. Hello, everybody. Thank you, as always, for listening. Let's just get right into it, shall we? Moving from left to right on your radio. Up first, we have a man who's finally made the ultimate permanent commitment to his football team by purchasing Seahawks vanity license plates. From Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weedeye. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, those are awesome, by the way. I was $8.97. I got in at 10 a.m., and I was already the 897th person to go to a licensing office. And by the way, the coveted number 12, they auctioned off for charity, and it went for $42,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. By the way, it's 2014.
Yes.
Anybody used to write, you know, are you ready to write that down when you go and, you know, write out a check or whatever or sign something? I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm still writing 13.
Yeah, who writes a check, man?
I use. Yeah, I know. That's why I felt really stupid.
You stumbled
as I said
right
that.
There, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. Up next, we have a man who has made it his life's work to replicate the Cleveland Indians roster from the movie Major League. The executive editor of Operation Sports, Mr. Chris Sanner. Chris, welcome to the show.
Actually, I have tried this before. I should probably turn my phone on silent as well, but you would be surprised how hard that is to actually try to track down a full 25-man roster for that team. That is really tough to do, and I'm so glad you ignored the big pink, red, and white elephant in the room, and actually, that was a really bad Andy Reid joke, and I didn't realize. I'm out.
Up next, we have a man who's finally taken the first step towards achieving his lifelong dream of museum curation. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
Hello. Yeah, I don't know about lifelong dream, but it was certainly, once it was offered to me, once I knew it was a possibility, I was on board from the very start. So yeah.
Well, yes, and I'm referencing, obviously, the fact that Sumit helped put together some of the content for the what is it? I mean, it's the museum in New York, a bit of a Madden retrospective of 25 years.
Yeah, it's the Museum of the Moving Image, which is in Astoria in Queens. So I was had to become, you know, like guest curator. So what they have me, you know, I helped shape the exhibit in the sense of they're going to have five playable games. So Madden, the original John Madden football from 1988 on Apple II, the Genesis version of Madden 94 from 1993, the PlayStation version of Madden 99 from 1998, the Xbox version of Madden 2005 from 2004, and the Xbox One version of Madden NFL 25. So those will all be playable, and then they'll also have a timeline in which I touched on every single you know, year of the series from 1988 through 2013.
Well done.
That's when everyone's listening to this, that'll be, that exhibit is opened. It opened January 9th, and it'll be running through February 23rd.
Well done. Solid lineup. And up next, we have a man who just hit send on his latest email to Bud Selig about proposed changes to the Hall of Fame eligibility rules. The author of Stick Jockey from Kotaku and a big fan of Armando Benitez, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rich. Funny you bring up Armando Benitez, because Hall of Fame voting day always reminds me of another Oriole who also only got a single vote for the Hall of Fame, and that would be Rick Dempsey. Mm. Anybody remember him?
Yeah, he was a great catcher a couple of World Series champions, if I'm correct.
A catcher for the Dodgers in 88, catcher for the Orioles in 83, catcher for about 10 years for the Orioles. I saw him, if Mike Suzek was here, I would mention how I saw Rick Dempsey pitch an inning of relief in Milwaukee in 1991 against the Red Sox. But Dempsey, in his last year with the Orioles, 1986, President Reagan goes up to Memorial Stadium to do the annual toss out the first pitch of the season. And in April 1986, you know, we were having all of our problems with Libya and Muammar Gaddafi at that time. And Rick Dempsey, for some reason, before the pitch, decided to make small talk with President Reagan. And he asked him what we were going to do about Libya. And President Reagan pointed at the bench and he said, "Well, I think we ought to nail his nuts to that log and push him over." So I think whoever cast a single vote for Armando Benitez today, one of the worst Orioles ever, and Rich, one of the worst Mets ever to wear that uniform.
Yeah, he was not exactly, he ain't even going close to the Mets Hall of Fame either. That's
man, when he plunked Tino Martinez, man, I was pissed.
Oh, yeah.
A walking torch. But actually, Submit, we do have to credit him for instigating one of the greatest and most satisfying brawls in baseball history.
Yeah, that's fair.
Daryl Strawberry, like, just leveling people.
Oh, my God, a missile to the side of the face. But I think whoever voted for Armando Benitez today should have his nuts nailed to a log and pushed over.
By the way, Owen, that is an excellent Ronald Reagan impersonation.
Well, thank you very much. It's morning in America.
And by the way, for the kids out there, and by kids, I mean even the people like named Sumit Sarkar and Chris Sander on this show, back, you know, in the 80s, there was no Washington, D.C. baseball team. So the president had to go all the way up to Baltimore because that was the closest team to throw out the first pitch.
Man, you act like I'm a youngster. I remember the days when D.C. didn't have a team. I mean,
yeah, it was only 2004, Rich.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
geez, come on.
I know. And hey, I am Rich Grisham, a man who has decided the only thing that keeps me from completely swearing off football of all of its kinds, being college and pro, is the fact that Mike Suzek also probably is doing the same right now. Because
has he thawed out yet?
I don't know. I don't even want to discuss this. So we're just moving right on. No football.
Actually, Rich. You brought up a point there. I got laughed at, and I got laughed at very mean, like by a lot of fellow panelists when I called out the Sooners beating the Tide like weeks ago. You guys laughed at me as if I were crazy, like I was the crazy guy in the room. I want to take this moment to just give it up to myself, okay? Just this moment. Just this moment.
I think that is definitely the first giving it up to yourself that we've had on the show. So well done, Mr. Sander. Well done. All right, so let's get right into it. We have got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to hit on the continuing issues, struggles, catastrophe, disaster, debacle that is NBA 2K14. On the next-gen consoles. We are going to talk a bit about the upcoming MLB The Show. We're going to talk quite a bit about Power Star Golf. So we got a lot of good stuff to talk about tonight. And we got a few good listener questions as well. But we're not going to do the What You've Been Playing segment in its entirety, but I do want to just spend a couple minutes. For the last week and a half or so, I've been playing quite a bit of Gran Turismo 6 on the PS3. I have a project that I'm working on, so that's the reason that I have it. I am not a Gran Turismo guy. I'm not really a big sim racing guy. I didn't even play Gran Turismo 5. But I obviously, like, pretty much, I think 95% of the people that bought an Xbox One at launch, I bought Forza 5, played it quite a bit, discussed it a little bit on the show, thoroughly enjoyed a lot of it. But as, you know, the more that I played it, the more tired I got of seeing the same tracks all the time, and got more and more frustrated by the microtransaction-based economy, which has been altered and balanced and improved. But I've been playing Gran Turismo 6 for a couple of weeks now, and it is so, in my opinion, right? This is not a review. This is just from what I played. It is so much better than Forza 5. There is more to do as far as different ways to play the game. There are lots more locations. There are many more vehicles, and not just in volume, but also in type. An example of that is that last night when I was plotting through my career, at one point I was kart racing. And then I went right from the kart racing series to like this crazy super-powered car series. And a lot of times when you're playing a racing game and you sort of venture, oh, I'm going from A class to B class or B class to C class, or however they're classified, there are very subtle changes to how the cars are. But man, when you go from basically a kart to a ZR1, the difference is stark. And it's just, I'm really impressed with Gran Turismo 6. To me, it's no contest how much better it is than Forza 5. The career is fun. There's also some really nifty online modes and offline modes, not just, you know, racing against your friends. The license tests, which one of the reasons I have not been a Gran Turismo guy for the last few years, has been the license tests used to just absolutely wring me dry. And they're actually fun and enjoyable and not that difficult. They're like the right level of difficulty to where they teach you the game. So that's been fun. Like I said, a lot of great, interesting online modes, a lot of different stuff to do. And they integrate your friends very well. Like in the license test, as long as you're connected online, when you're trying to accomplish your goal, not only do you obviously see yourself while you're driving, but you see all of your friends, and it kind of helps push you along to try to get better. You know, I'm racing in my license test, and I see where three or four of my buddies, how they're ahead of me, and it kind of pushes me along to do better than that. So without rambling on too much about it, I am just blown away, not only at how much I'm enjoying Gran Turismo 6, but I can't sit here and describe why I'm enjoying it so much. I don't. It's definitely, to me, more inviting to a non-gearhead than any other Gran Turismo I've ever played. It's easier, more fun to play, has a lot more fun stuff to do, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and it has ruined me for Forza 5. I mean, Forza 5 looks beautiful, races great. It's a great game in many ways, but to me, Gran Turismo 6 absolutely trumps Forza 5 in every way. So I was surprised that I felt that way. So I just wanted to mention that. Has anybody else at all on the panel dabbled in Gran Turismo 6 at all?
No, but it's not because I don't have... It's not because I have something against that title, but like you, I have Forza on my Xbox One, and I've just that's been because that arrived. You know, when it was kind of weird when my PS4 arrived first, and all the sports titles I got with that. So I've been playing sports on it. I don't have, you know, Madden or anything on the Xbox One, but my racing is all on the Xbox One. So
right,
but your endorsement counts for a lot. So maybe I should go check it out.
Well, if you still got your PS3 connected, it's definitely something I would recommend checking out at some point. And, you know, it'll also be very interesting. Obviously, Sony just announced the PlayStation Now service. I don't know a whole lot about the details, don't know the pricing. I don't think they've announced a whole lot about it, other than the fact that it will allow you to stream Sony games from consoles past. It'll be very interesting. And I would hope that Gran Turismo 6 would be one of the initial games offered for PS4 owners who don't have a PS3, because it's just that good. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of games that I think will be very interesting to sports fans on the service, and probably warrants its own
its own discussion, but just thinking about it today, I'm like, wow, you know, how many great sports games from the past on the PlayStation and the PS2 and the PS3. I mean, do you think a lot of those are going to be available? Are there going to be licensing issues that will prevent that? So before we jump into the main topics, I just want to go around the table real quick. When you heard the PlayStation Now announcement, and you know, what did you think the impact would be to sports games? We'll start with you. Sumit. What did you think?
You know, the announcement was great because it's something that Sony had talked about when they first announced the PS4 back in February of 2013, almost a year ago. You know, they said it was going to be Gaikai based, and they talked a big game and then didn't really talk about it again until E3, when they were like, oh yeah, it's coming in 2014, and then hadn't talked about it again until earlier this week. So it's encouraging to hear that. It also seems like, I don't know if people saw, there's a really good column in on Wired Gamelite from Chris Kohler, where he was like, you know, the service is called PlayStation Now, but it seems like, from the way Sony's talking about it very sort of gingerly at this point, that it's going to be more like, you know, PlayStation a few years from now, in the sense that there's going to be a bare bones rollout this summer. That's what they're saying so far. Right now, the plan is that they're going to stream PS3 games first, and then later on PS1 and PS2 games. And I also saw a comment that they're going to investigate streaming PS4 games. And I think the big deal is that it's not just going to be streamed to PlayStation devices like PS4s and Vitas, but also to other devices like tablets, smartphones, and Bravia TVs.
Right.
They also haven't talked anything about pricing. All they've said is that you'll be able to rent individual games or pay for a subscription. There's no word if it'll be part of PlayStation Plus.
Right.
Or, you know, I assume it'll be an additional, you know, thing. But, you know, Owen pointed out, we were discussing it earlier, Owen doesn't think that there will be, you know, licensed, you know, sort of annual sports titles on there. But, you know, I'm hoping maybe we'll see some.
Say it.
Well, look, personally, you know me. You know how much of an old school guy I am. I really want to rent ESPN NFL 2K5 to see how much
better it is.
Madden 25.
I knew it was coming.
You know, that's what I want to do. But no, I mean, you know, if we could get some stuff like you know, the old PS2 NBA Street games.
That's the other game I was gonna say. You know, NBA Street. You know, some NFL Blitz games from yeah, a few years ago, like
NBA Ballers. That is all near and dear to my heart. NBA
yeah,
Ballers.
You know, Blitz 2000 and PS1. Yeah.
There are some great arcade sports games that have completely disappeared.
Yeah.
From the market today, that could not only could they make a. Not only could they be played often for the first time by people, but could potentially, because of their availability and playing, generate demand for new versions of those games as well. And I know I'm probably reaching on that. But Owen, sorry, go ahead, Sumit. Sorry, I didn't realize I cut you off.
No, it's fine. Just last thing is that, the thing that it stressed right now is that we really don't know very much about this at all, how it's going to work, and what the experience is going to be like. I mean, if they've got it running on Vitas at CES, like four different games, like Last of Us and Beyond Two Souls and some other things. And, you know, all the reports that I've seen out of CES are like, it works. But, you know, obviously controlled environment and all the caveats to come with that. So who knows what it's going to be like. But also, another thing is that we have no idea what the library is going to be like for this thing. You know, they're saying, like I said, right now, just PS3 games. We don't know if it's only first-party, you know, Sony-published titles. We don't know if any third-party publishers are on board. I think the big, you know, sort of way that this could really be a huge thing is that, you know, is if they go the virtual console route. You know, imagine if you could get Wayne Gretzky 3D Hockey 98 through this service. You know, if Sony started getting, you know, like older games from other consoles on there. That's the really intriguing prospect, but who knows.
Oh, and your thoughts?
I know very little about PlayStation Now, but even then, I'll sound twice as smart as I did when I responded to your question about Gran Turismo, thinking it was on the PlayStation 4.
I was going to let you just slide completely on that, man.
No, I'm going to own that. I don't know what I was thinking. But no, to be honest, this strikes me more as a push to extend PlayStation gaming into devices that are not PlayStation platforms already, like their televisions or tablets or other things. The value proposition to people who already have a console is quite low. And I would just say that not knowing what the library is, if for some reason they come to this and it's like a robust library of every PlayStation 2 game you could ever want, then hell yes, that's going to be worth, I mean, you're going to see a lot of people in my readership signing up for that for sure. Yeah. But I don't see it going in that direction. I see, to reiterate, the problems with licensing, I think it's going to be a mostly first-party library that's in this, and definitely with sports. I mean, you know, these licensing agreements expire, and once they're gone, I mean, it costs money to restart them, and then whoever is involved in that gets royalties. So, you know, don't hold your breath for any of that. I mean, you know, something like Hot Shots Golf.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I mean, wasn't that a classics offering on PlayStation Network already, you know, so this is it's good. It adds more content. That's great. I'm interested to see I think it's also a pricing tier for the super consumer who already has, you know, a PS4 or a PS3, you know, fine. Yes, I'll throw another $5 on this and get, you know, another 20 games that I'll never play, but damn it, they're free.
Right.
And that's the way I am with PlayStation Plus. I mean, in the end, it's not a pernicious thing. I just think it's something that they have created now to consoleize, for lack of a better word, their own their television offerings and other devices that are not consoles.
Yeah. Well, definitely intriguing. Definitely something I'm going to be very interested in. And as a current PlayStation Plus subscriber and somebody who has been extremely satisfied with PlayStation Plus as a service for the value I get for what I pay for it, I am anticipating that Sony is going to do a good job with the pricing of this. I don't know anything, but they seem to have done a good job with their online offerings from a price perspective since the introduction of PlayStation Plus. But all right, let's get into it. Topic number one has to be, simply because of the amount of discussion, the sheer size of it, some further analysis of the next gen situation with NBA 2K14. You know, Brian Wiedeye has done a tremendous job cataloging the issues on Pasta Padre. Operation Sports has obviously been following it closely. I mean, you know, Steve Noah regularly tweets directly at the 2K guys and gets responses. I think Owen Good, though, I think you crystallized with your headline of, I believe it was your most recent Stick Jockey, the entire summary of the situation, which is, if you combine Battlefield and Forza's Outrages, you'd have NBA 2K14. So I want to start with you on this discussion, framed around the fact that when last this panel got together, we hadn't even had the worst situations happen. And very quickly, the worst situation was that basically since from Christmas until, to some degree, even right now, many aspects of NBA 2K14 were fundamentally broken. The servers were unavailable for days at a time, which prevented many, 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 many thousands of people from accessing their gameplay saves. Complete modes were fundamentally broken, like the park. Constant regular crashes. Issues on the size and scale that I think are unprecedented in sports games. And again, Owen, you with the piece that you put together, you summarize it great. So I want to lead with you, Owen, as somebody who has written about this for the amount of time that you have and have analyzed really the history of sports games, where does this stack up? What is the true impact of what's happened with NBA 2K14?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that headline and just I want to credit Brian on this because he's shown a lot of leadership on this subject before a lot of other large sites have. And it is basically understanding the situation through a prism that he has refracted it through, that brought me to this conclusion. Because it's like, if you had a game that, I mean, let's step aside from sports And if you know, everybody's familiar with the anger that has been directed at Microsoft over Forza's microtransactions, and everyone is familiar. I mean, EA is looking at, you know, some kind of a shareholder lawsuit, however legitimate that is.
For Battlefield 4, right.
Correct. And so, but, and if you combined both of those screw ups in a single game, and yet NBA 2K14 has flown under the mainstream radar here. So, you know, all credit to Brian. That was really where the thought came from, you know, for me, in sort of a, in the column, which kind of was a, you know, we've had all we can stand and we can't stand no more capstone. But NBA 2K14, you know, I said it in the column, I think it can fairly be called the worst sports launch on this console generation. And I think it's something that can, you know, that it calls up those haunting memories of how sports stumbled so badly at the last console transition, because they've just mangled it. And it's the kind of thing where I hate laying these criticisms out, because the people who take them the most personally are more often the ones who don't have, you know, any say in the decisions that created them.
Right.
So Visual Concepts is an extremely dedicated studio and takes, you know, again, very personally the mission of quality. And what you're talking about here is a problem in netcode, which would be a VC issue. I mean, I'm VC being Visual Concepts, not virtual currency.
Yeah, good distinction right there.
Which, while balancing that economy, again, is a development issue, the decision to implement it in the first place or to enhance it, because it was present last year, is wholly on 2K Sports and the publisher. And they have this glamour title of sports video gaming pinched by both things. And even if they finally resolve their longstanding problems, especially with, and I can't wrap my head around, you know, what is the user benefit to having your My Career, your My GM save files synced with the server? It's got to have something to do with your virtual currency earnings, and fine, but they can't articulate a user benefit to that. And when you can't, and when you have a system that, when you're into the bargain, fails, and frankly, 2K Sports has a reputation for failing servers. When you're into the bargain fails and somebody in their home can't access the career that they put, you know, so much work into, and you can't articulate a benefit for why that's worth waiting through, I mean, you've screwed up big time. And I think that this is a title that's got to do a lot of soul searching. And once it fixes its netcode problems, once it fixes its servers problems, I mean, this doesn't even get into the lag that a lot of other people report. And I don't see this as much because I don't play online multiplayer as much. But Brian, I know that you do. And you know, I get emails, you know, once a day, people talking about the gap, often exaggerated, in, you know, pressing the button and seeing the input, you know, take effect on the screen. Even once they get that sorted out, they are still left with an economy that many people feel is abusive, with decisions on this game, with the microtransactions that people think are unfair and unnecessary, and lock them out of experiences. I don't want to say they took for granted, But 2K Sports set this up. NBA 2K set this up as, okay, this is the 2K experience. And now, and I'll let others speak to this, now you've got to start paying this virtual currency to, you know, take advantage of some very fundamental things that you would do in a career mode. And it's a terrible position for them to be in. It's almost indefensible.
And what's interesting, too, is sort of the narrative, right? When the first NBA 2K14 Next Gen trailer came out, it garnered nothing but the praise of basically everybody who saw it, right? I mean, non-sports fans were talking about, wow, I mean, this might be the first sports game that I buy in years. And one of the reasons that there was so much excitement about it was because so many people said, and man, everybody knows how good NBA 2K is, so there was a ton of goodwill that had been created by the simple fact that the NBA 2K series has been amazing. And, you know, from NBA 2K11 onwards, it's been, you know, like the rock star of sports video games. then once it was released, the initial like day one, day two reaction was, wow, this the gameplay is so good. Look at the visuals. Listen to the sound. Look at how the players look. It just plays great. And when you started to actually just play the game, both the My Career single player as well as the 5-on-5, it was just so much fun. Again, not perfect, not that you couldn't find issues, but it was just tremendous. But then over the course of a couple of weeks, when the VC implementation began to become clear and how the economy of the game was something that I don't think anybody felt had been communicated by 2K Sports or had been understood by the initial reviewers, that was sort of the first red flag. But then the real issue happened at Christmas, when all of a sudden, from Christmas until well past New Year's, for I would venture to say the majority of players, they couldn't even play the game. So it has been an astounding narrative from, wow, this looks and plays great, to, huh, I don't feel very comfortable with how the game is designed, to, oh my gosh, the servers are down for 2+ weeks. Brian, you've obviously been tracking this. The sentiment, what is the sentiment around NBA 2K14 from the people who are playing it or have been trying to play it recently?
It is startling kind of to see that transition from, and it happened with me, it happened with all of us, and it happened with seemingly everyone out there. The game was stunning at first and then took a stunning turn for the worse. And right now it's incredible to see, because you typically had positivity around 2K. They always had online issues and stuff, but you had people having fun with the game, acknowledging its high points even with its issues. But now if you go on social media, it's nonstop criticism, nonstop. It's people returning their games. It's declaring that they're not going to buy next year. It's filing complaints with the Better Business Bureau, any number of, because their support, not only are there all these problems, but their support is really poor and their communication is poor on a number of these issues. So there's a lot of frustration out there, and it's incredible because a lot has to do with the online issues, the servers, and basically needing an online connection to the servers to play most of these modes. But it's also the damaging VC system. It's the crashes that prevent people from playing My Player and My Career, or My GM and My Career. It's the lag in online games, like Owen noted. And then there's bugs that were introduced in the last patch into My GM mode, where people can't progress past the playoffs or through the playoffs. And they also can't change contract offers, stuff that presumably will be fixed in another patch. But it's a waiting game where here are all these number of weeks where people can't play the game the way they want or can't play it at all. And that's not something that's forgotten. Right. That's not just an issue that comes and goes and people forget about in a few months when they start hyping the next game. That stuff sticks with people when they have to return a game or they have to seek out help to figure out why their game isn't working, only not to get an answer. It's got to be a scary proposition for 2K at this point. But they brought it all on themselves. A lot of this, not necessarily the crashing or the bugs, but the online system that requires the connection to the server and the VC, these were all design decisions on their part. And like we've noted, it's not necessarily the decision of the designers for the game or the programmers, but it could come from above. But to consumers, it doesn't matter who makes those decisions. It's the game. The game made this decision, or the company made this decision, and that brand represents them going forward, and it's damaged at this point.
You know, and another source of frustration, and you touch on this, Brian, is the communication or lack thereof. I mean, it is, and I'm not trying to call out individual people, because that's not really professionally ethical, but at the end of the day, right? I mean, they put Ronnie 2K out there as the face of the game, and Chris LD2K as the the face of the game, and how many times can you see the tweets from them? Devs are looking at it before you just get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are in a bad position too, right?
Like they aren't even probably authorized to respond to much of this stuff. But then when you get the posts pointing out a positive retweet or something of the game or all this stuff really stands out as inauthentic and disrespectful.
You know, I can speak to this. I mean, I got a phone call when I was in New York 3 weeks ago. You know, somebody on their PR staff wanted to tell me about how they were the top selling next generation sports game and in North America. And it's like they're real proud to bring that up. But I told him, I said, unless you guys, he said, we have some news to announce. And I said, unless you guys want to talk about the problems in your online service or changes to your virtual economy, I'm probably not going to be interested. So they're real happy to talk about things that make themselves look good. I'm talking about on a corporate level again. And I do think Ronnie Singh and Chris are hamstrung
by
what they can and cannot say.
Yes.
This starts at the top, and they need to be a little more forthcoming on this. And that's real convenient and easy for me to say. And 2 years ago, they very courageously, if you want to say it that way, did a story about, okay, we have problems in our net code going back to the Dream. I mean, it was a story that I wrote, and they got beat up for it even after that. So they may be gun shy on it. I mean,
that was like a month after release, right? But
I think it was more than that.
I think, go ahead for a second and then bounce back.
No, I was just going to say they may be gun shy after that experience. They go, well, hell, if we admit our mistakes, we're still going to get beaten over the head for it. So there's no percentage in it for us, but they need to be more forthcoming.
And that's basically when I looked at why a lot of websites weren't covering this and why 2K wouldn't make kind of a blanket statement acknowledging issues or explaining what they're doing to fix them. It's because once they do that, those sites will cover that, and it becomes it gets the spotlight on all these issues that people may miss for right now. And they're still trying to collect sales. I mean, 2K is a strong seller in the January through June months. Because it's still the NBA season. It goes strong for those months, so they don't want to damage that. And by being forthright about all these issues, I think they feel it would bring too much negative attention and that they can just keep that all isolated to individuals at this point. But, it's bothersome and it irks me to no end.
And, I mean, Sumit, you're a reporter for Polygon. I mean, you deal with PR probably not just on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. What's your take on the communication or lack thereof around issues or, perhaps the selective communication and the way that this has all gone down? Because, again, from my perspective, knowing how hamstrung they are doesn't matter. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's very frustrating for us who are trying to write about this, but that doesn't compare, pales in comparison to the frustrations that the actual players are feeling. And, I feel for the creative people at Visual Concepts who must be super frustrated by these technical issues that are preventing people from enjoying their game. But, when you've paid $60 plus $400 or $500 for a console to play this thing because you saw that OMG trailer on YouTube, that those are the people that I'm going to have sympathy for. Here, the thing is that, you look at the stuff that that's coming out from Ronnie Singh and also from the 2K support Twitter account, and I think they're making a good faith effort in terms of saying what they can. As Owen pointed out, they're probably hamstrung in some sense, and at the same time, if you look at some of the replies that they're sending out to people when people are getting frustrated, I think, one of the sort of hard and fast rules of community management is that, as much as people might be jerks to you, you just can't let any frustration show. And I'm sure it is frustrating for these guys, but there are definitely tweets where they're like, that I'm looking at from these guys, and I'm like, that's not helping anybody. The stuff you're saying to these people, acting like, you're the victim here. It's like, no, man, these people paid money for this thing and they're frustrated and if you can't provide any help, then or any updates, that whatever, but don't you get frustrated at them, because that's they're not the target here. And so the thing is that another thing that's frustrating is to see Like right now, if you look at, you know, right now it's 11:25 on Wednesday night, and if you look at Ronnie's Twitter, he's just been retweeting people because he's been playing in the park on PS4.
Yep.
And he's like, "Hey, if you play in a game with me, you know, and tweet a photo, I'll retweet you." And so if you look at his stream, it's just a string of these tweets. And like, to me, it's like, if I can't play my game, that's just a slap in the face, right? You know, if I'm trying to play my team, which, by the way, is still broken. I tried tonight or earlier tonight to play that and was able to load, like, to the main screen and then, like, tried to go into, like, the tournament screen. And then it was, like, the 2K Sports server is unavailable at this time. You know, that's been pretty much broken for the past couple of weeks. And, you know, even they said, like, late last night they put a fix in. How has the mode been? You know, whatever they're doing, it's not working there. And another thing is that, you know, for all the online issues, there's also, as you guys have mentioned, the crashing. You know, people have been tweeting photos of crashing to the dashboard on both PS4 and Xbox One. You know, they said that I guess the latest from 2K support is that the issue is not online related. So it's, you know, a bug in the game, which is, even more disconcerting at this point. And, you know, now I'll switch over to the side of writing about it. You know, I've been repeatedly emailing PR representatives for 2K Sports here, you know, just trying to get something out of them. And they're like, yeah, we can't really provide – we don't have anything beyond what's on Twitter from Ronnie and from 2K. You know, like we don't have any updates. And it's just – it's unbelievable. And in fact, I think by the time you guys hear this, by the time this show goes out – we will have updated our review on Polygon. In case people don't know, we change the scores depending on or post launch depending on how a game's doing. You know, if we feel it's warranted, and we're going to lower the score. I'm not sure what to just yet, but this is really, really ridiculous at this point.
Okay, so we all know that sports games are the best game, but there's a lot of other great video games out there too, and no better way to keep up with them than the Weekend Confirmed podcast. Since 2006, host Garnet Lee has kept listeners up to date with everything from AAA to indie, news, commentary, analytical discussion, and of course, lots of hands-on time with games and the legendary What You've Been Playing. Jeff Cannata joins Garnet as co-host of Weekend Confirmed, bringing the whimsy and keeping things always upbeat. And a rotating group of video game industry vets from both the media and the studio round out the show each week. It's like getting to sit in and listen to a weekly meetup of video game friends talking about the things they love the most. Available each Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, subscribe to the Weekend Confirmed podcast today to join the gang. Available on iTunes, your favorite RSS podcast player, or directly from shacknews.com. So, Chris Sanner, you're the executive editor of Operation Sports. Your entire life is communicating. You have to communicate your site's opinions and facts, and you have to call the communications from your listeners and from the, you know, various producers of games. What has this been like for you?
Well, first off, I just want to say that my router was bought from 2K Sports, apparently, because it's going up and down. So if I get caught, if I get this taken off here, that's why. I apologize. But I don't know how many of you guys know this, but I actually do a lot of I do some consulting work, social media, that sort of thing, just PR, just all this stuff to businesses, just letting them know how do you deal with things. And this is crisis communication. This is things are going really, really badly for this product right now. They're getting beat up on Twitter over and over again. The first thing I was taught about this is you do not ignore the problem. What's going on? The problem's being ignored. And that creates a whole lot of bad faith. And in this day and age in communication, when you see this, you see this stuff just tends to snowball. I mean, you saw really the first little bits and pieces of it with the NBA Elite stuff, you know, years and years ago. I don't mean to draw comparisons. These are two completely different things. But, I mean, you see people are complaining about, you know, they can't play their game. And yet you see on the 2K Twitter streams and stuff, they're, you know, promoting they're the best-selling next-gen game, patting themselves on the back, saying, good job, everybody. That's going to rub people the wrong way. I don't know who's in charge there with that, but that's a big problem. Now, I know Ronnie and Chris, they are hamstrung. They have, I mean, you guys know how corporations work. There's no way they can just, you know, they cannot address the problem if the guys up above them do not want it addressed. And that's the problem. That's where the break is happening. So I feel sorry for those guys because they're doing the best with what they can to try to enjoy this. And
that used to work years ago before social media and stuff, and before they made it kind of
exactly.
2K, as bad as anyone, 2K has made this kind of their central that's where they funnel everybody to, if you want news on the game or if you want information on what's going on. So you can't just ignore it at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're basically what they have done is they have basically decided they're doing a 2005 type of communication model, which is we'll let you know. But in this day and age, in 2014 now, I got 2014 right, by the way. I did not think I would do that. But in 2014, if you're not willing to have a conversation, especially on a platform, Twitter, where conversation is the literal backbone of that platform, if you're not willing to conversate about these problems and try to fix them in a meaningful way and you're just ignoring these problems, and then, you know, you basically sound aloof. You tick people off, and you're creating a whole lot of bad will. Now, I'm not saying EA is ever going to be able to catch NBA 2K, but if the guys at EA right now, if they don't see this ginormous opening to create a whole bunch of goodwill going into next year, I mean, I have no faith whatsoever EA will do it. It's going. I mean, you guys know how that goes. But this is one of those things that frustrates me just from a communicator standpoint, because I'm looking at this just from what I would do with the company I was dealing with. And I mean, my head wants to explode seeing some of this stuff. And then you see them trying to give away virtual currency to make good with people and that sort of thing. No one wants virtual currency. They want their game to work. I mean, thanks for the 1,000 virtual currency points. I guess I'll go buy me the ability to trade a player. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, that's where this is really. There's just a whole bunch of bad decisions. They just, if I were. I guess to sum this up for me, if I were someone at 2K Sports and I was looking at this product, I would go back to the drawing board and say what we did this year did not work. Just did not work. It's time to rethink the strategy. That's what they have to do.
Submit. Yeah. You know, another thing, Chris made this great point with, you know, the way that they're doing this communication. You know, they're just the 2K support Twitter account is just anytime someone complains to them, they're like, oh, you know, please submit a support ticket. And it's like, you're not addressing the underlying issues here. And then what's great is that when someone, this is hilarious, when someone tweets them saying that it's a connection issue, they're like, oh, if it's a connection issue, try to go to this page. And what that page says is like, make sure your internet connection is like, make sure your console is connected to the internet and here's some information on port forwarding. That is literally like the FAQ that they point people to. It's laughable. When you look at something like, you know, like what I'll say here, Chris made a great point about the frequency of communication. When you look at something like Xbox Live, for example, so Xbox Live has had some more problems in the past year, I would say, with downtime and things like that. But I'll give them credit in one sense, which is that the Xbox support account is really good with updates in their Xbox Live service status page. You go there, and anytime there's an issue, they'll have it, you know, explain right there. They'll tell you what's affected. They'll tell you what the latest update was with a timestamp down to the second, like 5:15:32 p.m. And then they'll say, "Hey, we're still working on this issue. We expect to have another update in about 30 minutes." And then they, you know, sometimes they don't exactly adhere to that time schedule, but generally that's what they do until they've fixed the issue. And here, you know, if you're trying to get information, yeah, you can look at you know, Ronnie2K's Twitter account to get a sort of stream of updates, but that's going to be, you know, it's not something that you can look at for constant updates, consecutive updates, because the tweets about the issues, the updates are going to be interrupted by Ronnie's tweets about the San Francisco 49ers or his retweets of twit pics of him playing in the park. You know, like, they need to have a central place, a single page where people can go. You know, there's nothing in the 2K forums either. You know, there's no central announcement page. So it's really something where they've dropped the ball.
They don't even visit their own forums. Mm. Yeah, it's just one of those things where you look at it and you say, well, why is that happening? And it's because if they did put up a central page, then it'd be acknowledging it's a serious issue. And I think they're still at this point where they're hoping it just goes away.
Yeah.
It'll go away, I promise you, when everybody quits playing the game. But there you go.
And we could, you know, and we could continue to talk about this, but I do want to, I guess where I'm going with this now is, right, for the most part, and Brian, you brought up the point that there are still plenty of sales yet to potentially be made of NBA 2K from now through the end of the finals. But I would imagine that by far the vast majority of the sales of this game have been made. Take-Two and 2K Sports have their money. Owen, do you think that the chief executives of Take-Two care about what's happening? And do you think that there will be any impact on NBA 2K15 because of what's happened?
No, and maybe. When you're talking about that high up the food chain, they start to care when they start to see it in sales, and they haven't. And GameStop hasn't even reported their holiday sales yet, or have they? I don't know. If they have, it was just recently. So they're only going to care if they start seeing it in sales, and then they're really going to care if they start seeing it in their stock price. And we are in no way near that yet, which makes it amazing, by the way. Now that you think about it. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was 3 months after release that EA had that shareholder lawsuit threat. But that's from a firm that really specializes in this kind of public calamity. Anyway, and so first off, no, they haven't. It is not something that has. They may be aware of it, but it's not something that has actually risen to the level of one of their direct reports sending them an email or them asking one of them, "Hey, what the hell is going on?" As far as will it change NBA 2K15, I think it has to in the virtual economy. And I think that will be a topic of discussion. They know once Visual Concepts is put up to, okay, this is what we're working on for next year, they know the first questions they're going to ask are, okay, well, what are you doing about the virtual economy? How is that going to change, if at all? Because a lot of people were very dissatisfied about that. And there's no getting away from it. I mean, that gets back to my original point, which is once they fix the glitches in online play, they still have this other thing hanging over their heads. So I think it will change next year's game in terms of what is walled off or considered optional or accessible behind VC, and what is, okay, we kind of overstepped our bounds in 2K14, and we can't do that anymore in 2K15. And there will be a lot of big, hey, we listened to the fans crap, which it always is. And people will forgive them, I think, because, again, as I said in the column, they have earned a lot of benefit of the doubt for being so high quality and having a reputation for fair treatment long preceding this year. This year, I don't want to say it's a mulligan, you know, because that just sort of absolves them of all responsibility, but I do think they can survive it. They have not completely wrecked a decade's worth of work and goodwill, but they have to deal with it next year, or they will.
So piggybacking off of that, and I'll just throw this in your direction, Chris Sanner, do you think the disaster that this has been in several areas that we've covered will impact the design of other sports games on next generation consoles? Chris.
I'm not sure what developers have to get through their heads. I guess what I want to say here is, if you haven't seen the disaster that is SimCity, now NBA 2K, where you have to be online for the game to work, to actually function, and to see the disaster that has become, if these companies are so hard-headed to see that this is just not something that works right now, because of a variety of issues, I don't know what's going to. Like, I hope that in the future sports games don't go in this direction that require you to be online. because that's a horrible, horrible, horrible direction for games because of a variety of issues. I mean, it's not just the simple fact that internet connections are screwy. It's also a simple fact some people don't want to be connected to the internet to play, have to play a game. They just want to play a game. They want to hop on, play a game, and hop off. People, I know we do polls on OS, you know, every few months just to get a pulse of where the community is. And I know OS is not fully representative of you know, game full every gamer and all that. But our percentage of online to offline gamers is still significantly skewed toward offline guys who want to just play, you know, by themselves, you know, play modes, build up guys, whatever. So I think it's a major mistake if developers want to keep going in this direction, given all the evidence at hand. So I think it will, but that's just me trying to be optimistic since that's one of my resolutions for 2014. I'm going to try to be more optimistic. And so I'm hoping that everybody takes these notes and they say, you know what? In 2014, while it seems like it should, this doesn't work as well as it should, and we should probably not require people to have a connection to play our game.
So, Brian Weedaw, you wrote a piece today, today being Wednesday, obviously, a couple days ago by the time the show, the Press Row podcast, goes live on the 10th. You wrote a piece today, January 8th, about concerns about MLB The Show, and wow, am I now concerned about MLB The Show based upon the combination of two things. Number one, MLB The Show has not exactly been known for the having the most amazing online service. And B, the usage of the word universal currency and the description of it. So I'll just stop stealing your thunder. Describe your piece today and the concerns and the potential reasons why maybe you think there may not be the same sort of overall design of the show as we've seen with NBA 2K14.
Well, the purpose wasn't to scare you or anything like
that. Well, you did.
I think what happened now is that because of this NBA 2K14 situation, every one of these companies with all of these games, anytime they make a change or add a new feature, they're going to have to explain whether any of this applies, whether it be an online connection needing to be required in order to use the feature or mode, or how currency would factor in. And so what you have with the show is, I don't think it's going to be anything like 2K14, but they are introducing what they're calling a universal in-game currency, which the universal part is what's makes me a little unsettled, more so than them having a currency to begin with, because that can affect the way people play multiple modes. It can affect whether you're able to sim through a mode and gain a currency if that's part of the feature set. And so it's more so about just acknowledging that I don't think it's going to be the way it is in 2K14 in the show, for example. But now these companies, it has to be a top priority to explain what they're doing with the games and how anything like that is going to factor in. And they have to do that before release, because as we saw with 2K14, they didn't do that. And then it just, and that's part of the main problem right now, is that a lot of people entered not expecting this to be the case, not expecting to need a connection to the 2K server to play their offline based modes. And then they got stuck in a situation where, well, you're out of luck because our servers are down, so now you can't play. So you can't spring it on people like that anymore. So they have to communicate this, and I think the sooner the better on how they're going about implementation of these things.
Well, and I believe you had a part in your piece today, which, and I could have my information wrong, but I think there was certainly more clarification about what universal currency can be applied to, and I now realize I'm not speaking correct English. Was that the first time that had been communicated, or is that something that you dug up that had been earlier communicated?
How so do you mean? I'm not sure what you're getting
well
at.
You listed the different ways that universal currency could be used, right? Like it can be used in for the Diamond Dynasty mode, and it can
So that's in the description, actually, of the pre-order bonus. And so there's nothing that jumps out in there that would startle me. It's, you know, franchise budget, which is fine as long as it's not a budget for spending on being able to trade players
or being able to pinch hit in a game.
Yeah, or manage your minor league team or something like that you have to unlock. then that's where things get bad. That's where you get into 2K14 territory. And then, yeah, Road to the Show training points and stuff like that, which you've already been able to buy in the past. But again, if it's about unlocking things and gaining currency in a mode that you can then spend in another mode, that's where things get a little shaky.
So, Submit, you're a big baseball guy. You're looking forward to the next-gen version of the show, the initial one, like we all are. You've looked at the small amount of screenshots. It looks amazing. Are you concerned?
I am concerned, and I'll tell you why. We touched earlier in the show on 2K not being able to demonstrate a benefit to the user for the VC being universal throughout my career, my GM, and my team in the game. I asked, and what they told me was that they have to, that it's, you know, always online in that sense, because they have to, you know, verify your save game with their servers to make sure that people aren't using exploits to get VC. That's the only benefit that I can think of, that, you know, you can be assured that people aren't cheating to artificially get VC and then train up their dudes so they can have 99 rated my players in the park against you. So, sure, I guess. With the show, you know, we've seen that they've been willing to experiment with this stuff before, as you mentioned, you know, being able to buy training points. You know, I don't want to sort of, you know, make assumptions at this point, because everything's, you know, we're still in the dark about this. However, I think in a more general sense, I'm worried because so far this console generation is you know, a little over 2 months old, and all indications point to this being the way of the future. You know, you're seeing it with a ton of you know, certainly Xbox One first party games, Forza, Crimson Dragon, Rise, and while these publishers may not be able to demonstrate a benefit to the user, they certainly can demonstrate a benefit to themselves
and the shareholders. And,
yeah, exactly. And so, I it really seems like this is just going to be the new normal here, and. I think certainly, you know, it's hard to say at this point what the effects of the always online failures of 2013 will be in 2014, because, you know, the 2014 games are still in development, and we're still not just reeling from these, from the consequences, or not reeling from the implementation of always online stuff, but we're still experiencing them in the case of NBA 2K14. But, you know, you look at that being a huge story with games like SimCity, not microtransactions, but always online, SimCity and obviously Battlefield as a multiplayer game, and you know, sort of how broken these games were, and NBA 2K14 as well, and you look at how that affects single player modes, or modes that were traditionally single player offline experiences. I would hope these companies are taking a long hard look at their implementation, but my unfortunate assumption is that they're going to experiment first. You know, rather than worry about that, they're going to at least dip their toes in the water with always online, with microtransactions, because that seems to be the way to go for now. And then after the fact, if there are consequences, then they'll worry about them later.
You know, and to a degree, I'm okay with new normals, right? Something that annoys me, and it's probably just because I'm a grumpy old man, but something that annoys me is when I hear people want to complain, you know, back in my day, when you bought a disc, you put it in the thing, and then it just worked. I'm like, there are a lot of benefits to integrating online capabilities. And for example, like, you know, I talked about it briefly earlier, if the new normal is done like Gran Turismo 6, I am great with that, because Gran Turismo 6 has microtransactions. Gran Turismo 6 has a lot of deeply integrated online features. And yet at no point, and I'm probably 20 hours into Gran Turismo 6, at no point have I ever seen a screen that said, if you want to do this, you got to pay us money. And at no point when I was disconnected from the internet was I not able to continue my single player campaign. It's perfectly, well, I shouldn't say perfectly because I've only spent 20 hours, but it is wonderfully well done. So if the new normal is well done and well designed, I am fine with that. It's when it's not well done and not well designed that it seems to have this catastrophic impact. So getting back to MLB The Show, Owen, you are another, you're a big fan of MLB The Show. I know you are, you know, obviously day one, if not sooner, on MLB The Show on the PlayStation 4. Where are you with what you know and what you're seeing so far on it?
Well, in my main mode of play, and Smith, I think you're the same way too, it's Road to the Show. So, you know, once I complete my review, to be honest, I mean, I'm in that mode for the lifespan. And we've seen sort of these VC impacts there, and they're purely optional. So I am at this point not really – I don't feel threatened by this kind of universal in-game currency because I don't see it describing amplified necessity to the mode that I particularly play. That's as a consumer. But I will echo everything else, you know, other people have said, which is, you know, once we start seeing things that actually are sort of expanded beyond that. I mean, I wrote about these training points as performance enhancing drugs. And I think, frankly,
and by the way, I can't ever look at a description of them without thinking exactly that now. You've completely ruined me for that, just so you know.
Well, good. And you should feel bad. And, you know, Rich, I hope one day you hit 600 home runs and get one vote for Hall of Fame.
I just might.
No. We've dealt with training points for a long time, and it's been a purely optional and indulgent thing. And yes, it's a pay-to-win model, but the social contract there is you know you're cheating. You know you're just basically buying your way to the end of the game. And I frankly kind of wonder how many people would buy their way to the end of a narrative game if they were given that option. That'd be a hell of an experiment. But it's the what actually concerns me the most about the show, and this may be a little esoteric or insidery, but it's worth noting. They usually take that game to CES, which is going on right now, and they didn't. You know what? We haven't seen any footage of this game yet.
Yep.
And we're talking two months from release.
Not even.
And the screenshots that have been sent around. I mean, I look at my Twitter feed, and the screenshots that keep getting sent around are ones I saw a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
You know, and people are talking about, well, this is what they look like. You know, the people are treating them like it's new, and it's the same shot at Fenway Park's out of town scoreboard. So, this isn't. You know, this is me as the newsman going, oh, this game's in trouble. I need to see more because I want something to write about, obviously. You know, so there's my ulterior motive for saying that. But people, I think, definitely by the time pitchers and catchers report, we're going to want to see a lot more out of what this thing is going to deliver because, you know, we're not seeing it. There's no other, there's not even a nominal competitor to push it this year. So Sony could show us a little bit more, I think, without committing itself to things that it hasn't yet fulfilled.
You know, I mean, Owen, you went right where I was going to go next and where I'm still going to go next, which is that, yes, we are less than 2 months from release. And MLB The Show has a tremendous amount of goodwill because of its long history of developing wonderful baseball games, which is very similar to NBA 2K, had a tremendous amount of goodwill based upon its long history of developing wonderful basketball games. Not a whole lot was communicated about NBA 2K14 for next gen until right up until, what, a week or so, really, before the game came out, which is when on Chris on Operation Sports, he had a wildly huge article about my GM, which I don't think talked about VC very much at all. I mean, is it out of the question to be thinking we could be heading down exactly the same road with the show that we have with NBA 2K14, Chris Sanner?
Oh, it's not out of the question. That's, I don't, I mean, I'm not a big fan of this direction, obviously. I'm going to be that old guy. I mean, being the youngest guy here, I guess, but I'm going to be the old guy and say, I remember when discs were put into consoles, and I remember when you didn't have to buy your way through a game, okay? I remember those days, and those days were good days. Barely 3D models, black animations numbered in only the hundreds. It was the golden age of sports gaming, I'm telling you right now. But yeah, this trend, I mean, it will not surprise me one bit if that's where we're going. It also will not surprise me one bit that we will see it one by one. It's going to fail because I'm a firm believer right now. The infrastructure is not there for always online. If millions of people log on to a game and in those servers have to process that, I mean, you're literally talking about it's a disaster waiting to happen every time. It's going to happen eventually with every single game. And if the show does it, especially the show and NBA 2K mirror each other in a lot of ways. And with the history, both series history of online problems, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to. If it doesn't, it'll surprise me. I will be very happy, of course, but yes. It's a disaster waiting to happen is what it is.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's been obviously not the most positive tone show to this point, but my goodness, when NBA 2K14 is working, it is tremendous. And the show is a wonderful, wonderful game. Nobody on this show wants anything but us to be raving about how great the show is in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks after launch and having discussions about interesting little nuances that happened to us in year five of our career or an amazing moment in a big division series game where you made a play or you got a hit that turned the series. Like, that's what we really want to talk about. And again, I'm not expecting a similar experience with MLB The Show 14 that I am with NBA 2K14, but boy, my eyes are much more wide open. I almost feel naive looking back at how I entered the NBA 2K14 experience on the PS4, and I am not heading that same way with MLB The Show. We'll close out this discussion real quick, Brian Weedy. Brian Weedy, do you think there's a chance that because we haven't seen anything, as Owen has mentioned, or heard much of anything about MLB The Show, that this could potentially be a delay situation? Or do you think this is just a strategic PR campaign where they're just going to, much closer to launch than normal, they'll give us information about the game?
Well, I think you can look at it both ways. It really depends on their strategy, and they don't have a competitor. I know we never really considered MLB 2K to be much competition, at least in terms of quality and certainly in terms of sales. But it can affect the way they market a game. So they now have the ability to, if they want to, roll out information on the game closer to its release. So let's say it's stuck with the March 4th date, which is traditionally that's the first day in the MLB contract. They're allowed to release a game as the first Tuesday in March. So they could release information closer to its release. The thing that stands out to me, though, is now they could move the game back a little bit if they wanted to and release it closer to opening day, because no one really cares. They're hardcore baseball fans, yeah, but no one really cares about spring training. It doesn't get people that excited to go out and run out and buy a game. And this is something you saw with Madden a few years ago when EA pushed its release back closer to the start of the regular season instead of the start of the preseason. And they saw a little boost in sales because it's more on the consciousness, the excitement is more there at that point. So could it be a few weeks difference? I think that's possible. It's too early to say, though, because it could really be either scenario. And it's just something we have to look at as we go. But if we get into February and we haven't heard anything, then things start to get weird. And then you have to wonder if the PS3 version is going to release before a PS4 version or something like that, some kind of situation like that. But I don't think we're at that point where we have to stress too much about it.
Yeah. And let's face it, it is still the first half of January. There is still quite a bit of time between now and the release. So
This has been, but even more so now without baseball in the other system. It's kind of a crown jewel, at least in terms of quality and something Absolutely. They can tout as an advantage. So you would think they'd start that early. And so that's why it makes me wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, but you know what? On the other hand, like if you read the forums or if you follow Twitter, I mean, it's already – I mean, it was – there was no January surprise of a Xbox One baseball game announcement. You know, as you all reported last week when it became official, when I think, Brian, you were the first to notice it, that on, you know, very early January, 2K Sports wiped clean any –
Any sign of existence
of a baseball franchise they have had for a decade, all of a sudden completely disappearing, a la the Matrix or something like that. You know, no one is making a baseball game on the Xbox One or the Xbox 360 or anything like that. So, you know, it's a weird, like you said, it's weird. But the MLB, the show constituents are doing a lot of the, not marketing, but they're doing a lot of the, well, you know, who cares? Because everybody knows the show is great anyway. The show is going to be awesome. Have you seen this? Have you seen that? Like there is, Sony may just feel like they're very, for the most part, very happy fan base is kind of taking care of some of that for them right now. Anyway, So. All right. Last major topic of the night, PowerStar Golf. Obviously, we've talked quite a bit. The hiatus of EA Sports' golf game has put a created sort of a void in the sim golf area. But when the Xbox One launched, PowerStar Golf was one of the games that was available. I didn't get it right away, but after a couple of weeks, I did. Oh, and good. I know you and I have had a couple of conversations offline about PowerStar Golf. I've played it. We'll talk about it, but I really want to go to you. You are a golf game aficionado. You enjoy your Tiger Woods. You have been playing quite a bit of PowerStar Golf. Let's hear it. What do you think of it? Is it worth your time?
Well, I run hot and cold on it. it certainly has a strong pick up and play pull to it, even within the career mode. I like the way the career events are structured. I don't necessarily agree with the way they scale the difficulty is not necessarily to move the tees, but to move the tees and give you crappier weather to play in, you know, as things get harder. I'm going to be a real nerd here and complain about the ball physics too. But the thing is, it's got all of the cartoony elements of an arcade golf game, and that's great. You know, the themed characters with themed power-ups and things like that. But the power-ups they are almost underpowered because the game, to its credit, tries to be a serious golfing challenge. Now, it's metered golf, okay? You know, it's the golf meter that people – I mean, hell, this is a element of golf game design going back decades, I think. And that's fine. But they really do, you know, try to make you think about your shot and what you're capable of pulling off. And if you cannot hit it to maximum power, you're going to have a bad – I mean, you know, if you go, well, this is the ideal shot and I'm going to get it to this range and I'm going to hit it, I'm going to, you know, ace it, get 100% on the power meter, that's great. It may actually go there. But, you know, you also have to – account for whatever percentage the lie is going to take off of you, and especially if you're, you know, in the first cut or the second cut there. I guess what I'm saying is it can be frustrating. I think where it frustrates people is that it gives you this air of go out there, you know, and be a magician or, you know, a swami. He's not a swami. He's some kind of a Tai Chi guru, you know, who slows down his timing, you know, for the perfect shot. Or be, you know, the astronaut who blasts things into orbit. And that's fun. But the game is actually a lot more credible and demanding than that would suggest. And so that might leave a lot of people like me, you know, standing up and screaming epithets and swear words at their television screen.
You? Come on.
Yeah. The ball physics, I especially as they play on the green, leave a lot to be desired. There is almost no predictability to the roll or to the carry once you get to your approach to the green. It's just so arbitrary. But I will say this, you know, when I first picked it up, I was on red alert for microtransactions, and I was harumphing and harmphing and all about this because the experience does not grant you golfer ability. It just unlocks future events in your career mode, which you use to unlock other golfers in the career mode. The currency is what gives you the better clubs and in different skins if you choose to wear those. And so I was like, oh, well, you know, this is how they're screwing you over here. This experience is meaningless. I'm glad I was actually going to like write something really nasty, and then I held off on it. And I'm glad I did, because now I kind of get what they're doing with it. And it does, I think, extend replay value meaningfully. And it doesn't just, you know, give you Christmas Day on Christmas Eve. Everything right there. I think it was last week or a week ago, I unlocked the last golfer, and I felt, okay, good. And when I did, I was like, okay, great. Now I'll take them in. Now I've got the whole set, and I'll play them, you know, multiplayer, or I'll play them in the one-off modes and set up the course as I want to set it up. And I don't want to play that stupid burning lava pit with maximum wind in my face.
Yeah.
So I think once I finally understood what this game was trying to do, I saw its value, and it's not. I don't think this is a game that's trying to gyp you or anything like that.
You know, I've had quite a bit of fun playing it, actually. I was surprised at first how treacherous putting was. Going into it, I sort of assumed that it was not a particularly difficult game. But in fact, you do need to really do a lot of analysis to your shots. But putting in particular is really difficult. Like, not even just the long putts, which are virtually impossible, at least for me at this point. But even the short ones, like the pitch in the yaw of the green, so to speak, is pretty treacherous at times, even on, you know, the 2-3-4 footers. So I was surprised by that. Not, you know, unhappily surprised, just... It's like, oh, okay, this game actually does force you to really look at what you're doing. And after the third or fourth hole in a row of doing that, you know, it takes a little bit of, you know, you got to keep your, you got to keep sharp on it. Otherwise, you can very quickly fall apart. It's easy to miss putts in Power Star. I really like a lot of the little things about it. Number one, it looks nice. It's a good looking game. It's not something that's going to blow you away. It's more cartoony than anything else, but it does look nice. I also love the fact that whenever I'm teeing off or whether I'm, you know, making an approach shot, I can see my friends where their best shots are. And that's kind of fun to be able to, I love the little indication when, you actually get a better approach shot than your friends does or something. Like, that's kind of cool too. And you know, overall, like to your point, Owen, it does not put microtransactions in your face. You can grind away. And when I say grind, I don't mean it in a RPG grind or anything like that. But just, hey, you know, if you want to just play the game straight up, you're not going to have to spend any more than the $20 that you already spent. You'll still be able to have a good time. But if you do want to try to get some better clubs or try to get some a little more, you know, good gear or powers, you can do that as well. So I have been pleasantly surprised by Power Star Golf. It, I think, is, it's hard to say whether it's worth the $20, but it is certainly within consideration of saying that it's worth the $20. And if you are somebody who has enjoyed golf games like Hot Shots or Tiger Woods, there's a lot of similarities there. And the other thing that it kind of put in my mind is I'm surprised that Sony did not have a Hot Shots game at launch with the PS4. I don't think Hot Shots is a particularly well-known or top-selling title, at least in North America, but I do know as a long time, you know, anybody who's played Sony platforms for a long time, Hot Shots is one of those constants. You know, they didn't launch with the Hot Shots, they didn't launch with the Ridge Racer. And Power Star certainly has a lot of influence of Hot Shots. And it's kind of surprising that the PS4 does not have that. So I guess, Owen, I'm going to put you back on the spot here. I don't think you did a review for Kotaku. Would the big word at the middle of the page, would it be a yes or would it be a no?
Oh, I'd give it a yes.
Okay.
I would give Power Star a yes. I mean, you know, we don't, again, and I don't mean to, you know, talk inside baseball about our review standard, but we don't do this based on a consumer recommendation. We give it a yes or a no based on whether the game is worth playing. Power Star Golf is definitely worth playing. And it's fun. I mean,
yes, agreed.
You know, that's the bottom line. That's why we should play a video game, is to have fun. It certainly is fun. So, yeah, it gets my vote.
Cool. All right, a couple of quick listener questions before we call it a night. This one's from Corey Andrus, our good friend, Corey SA. I'm going to start with you, Brian Weedy on this. He says, how do you think EA will deliver the World Cup title, DLC or retail? Brian, what do you think?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt it'll be a retail. The World Cup series has, and this is every 4 years release, has always sold well because it extends across the world. I mean, it's a huge fan base, and it's the same base that buys FIFA, but it's also kind of a more casual attractor, and it's an easier game to kind of get into for people who have that association with their nation, and especially in the U.S., where for much of the time, soccer is kind of out of the consciousness, and then it's back every 4 years for a lot of people anyways. And that's true of men's and women's soccer. So, and they also they had a disaster of a DLC release for their other what's I'm slipping on the name for the every
UEFA?
4 years
the Euro
yeah there we go yeah the Euro game. So, and that was just an utter disaster because they made it DLC, and because of that they stripped back resources on it, and people were really upset because they didn't even have licensing for all the nations. So I think there's no doubt in my mind it's going to be a retail release.
Submit, agree, disagree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an easy $60 for EA every 4 years, you know, just taking the sort of guts of the previous fall's FIFA release and then, you know, putting that focus in on the national teams. There's no way that's not a physical release.
All right, another one. This one from Billy Joe. I'm gonna throw this to you first, Chris Sanner. Will there ever be an MLB licensed game on the Xbox One?
Man, Xbox One. Will there ever be? Yes, but only because I want. I'm going. This is optimism, Rich. This is optimism here, and I'm going to say I do believe there will be. I think the question is, will it be EA or not? I really would like to believe EA will, but I just want to be optimistic and say yes, just because I feel like that is something that it's a need. I think Major League Baseball will want a game on the Xbox, and I think it'll end up happening. It might take a couple years longer than we would like, but it will probably end up happening.
One follow-up for you, Chris. I would ask, will that be a simulation game or an arcade game?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Because I think an arcade game might even be more realistic at this point.
Owen Good, your thoughts?
The EA Sports has shown no willingness on this. The development costs are multiples higher than what they were a generation ago. And I think what we've also seen is, you know, the advantage that iterative titles have. First of all, it's an advantage. Secondly, it's a necessity. You can't just come back to this cold, you know.
They've got what is it they do out in Korea or something? They've got MVP out in Korea,
but
they also have the Pro Yakuza Spirits, the very highly regarded, I think, Konami game too in Japan.
Okay, yeah, but EA Sports does have a baseball engine somewhere.
Yes, you're right. Yes.
Okay. Now I don't know. I mean, do they own that, or is that just they have a studio that I don't know. But, you know, technically, yes, they do have technology that is current, you know, that could handle this. But I don't think it would perform to expectations here in the United States, because they're still back on a pitching meter and everybody here is in analog controls. And you're also talking about you know, would it come out on Xbox One? You know, maybe. I don't know what MLB, I don't know what license they would expect for that. They seem to have a very high opinion of themselves. I do know that if it's an omnibus license and it goes to everything, you're paying a lot of money to get your ass kicked on PlayStation.
And that's, yeah. And it's not a big, and it's a piece of the pie, and it's not a big pie. I mean, we're talking, you look at sales of Madden, you look at sales of NBA 2K, and they're in the 5 to 6 million range. FIFA across the world is in the 10 plus million range. Baseball is under a million because there's no audience outside of the U.S. for baseball.
Yeah, and baseball, I mean, you know, you'd see in, you know, Major Nelson would do his top 20 games, you know, and this isn't online multiplayer. This is just you logged in and we're playing it, any mode. And NHL in the summer, out of season, was on that list.
It's a great
game.
And
baseball... Yeah, of course it is. And baseball, although frankly the Xbox representative left something to be desired, was never on that list for any reason. So, you know, they have sent no, that they are focused on UFC. That is their new title. That's what they're going to make money on. That's what they're going to put money into.
So it sounds like I'm hearing so far three no's. Sumit Sarkar, what's your thought?
Yeah, you know, we talked about it last year at E3. I interviewed Andrew Wilson, who was, you know, then the head of EA Sports, now the CEO of EA, about baseball. You know, he gave me like basically he said, you know, three things have to happen before we would even consider getting back into that. And you know, as Owen pointed out, it would be a, you know, huge R&D outlay for them just to get up to speed. And obviously the market conditions are there, and, you know, not in their favor, you know, considering that, as you guys have said, there's a small audience, relatively small audience, and also you have this crazy dominant market leader here. You know, with NBA Live, it's different because, you know, I think that was just as much of a, you know, not saving face kind of thing, but you know, sort of. They were like, if it kills us, we are going to get back into basketball. And hell, it did kill them. But you know, they're trying on this. You know, they're trying to start anew on this console generation. And obviously there's you know, as you guys said, also much more of an opportunity there. I think the only way that a publisher like EA gets back into baseball is if they can, you know, secure an exclusive license. You know, there was certainly like, obviously a third-party license, but I think that such a license would be prohibitively expensive for them. It wouldn't be worth it.
All right, last question of the night, and we got a bunch of good ones, so I appreciate this. This one from JRO810. Will Madden head down the NBA 2K14 VC microtransaction rabbit hole? Owen Good, what do you think?
That's a tough one. I know where this question comes from, and not to impugn the guy who asked it, but everybody distrusts EA Sports with good reason on some things, but they have made their bones off the Ultimate Team model and kept this kind of thing separate and largely tied to a mode where people expect or think microtransactions are reasonable, you know, demand. And you know, their numbers on this only continue to go up, especially as their footprint increases on, you know, next-gen systems. And it has increased with NBA Ultimate Team and NCAA Ultimate Team, which, as a side note, it's going to be really interesting to see how long that series is supported, especially if you've got an Ultimate Team that, you know, can conceivably extend the money it makes off of that. But I digress. I would like to think that they are smart enough to look at 2K's problems and abide by the old proverb, which is, you know, when your enemy is shooting himself in the foot, don't interfere. And they would not make the same mistake.
Percent. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But you know, I think it'll also bear out, frankly, how much people end up tolerating it after this year, in NBA and also what MLB The Show does.
Chris Sanner, agree, disagree, or something else?
I actually completely agree with Owen on that. I think EA has their microtransactions mapped out, and I think they are a little savvy down there in Orlando, in the sense that I think they got their microtransaction revenue stream going. There's no reason to rattle that boat. It's going well, and you've got a pretty happy fan base. I mean, despite the fact of what someone who might want you to believe that NFL 2K5 is better, you know, I don't think they're going that direction. In fact, they were very clear when we were going toward the next or this year's launch that microtransactions were not going to be a part of franchise mode. And honestly, I think they even held it up even as sort of a badge of honor in a sense that we aren't going there. And I think that's I hope that the order doesn't come down from up above that you are going there, because I think that where EA Sports games are right now with the microtransaction is actually a beautiful balance.
Submit counter thoughts, or are you with Owen and Chris?
No, I'm on the same page. You know, I think if you look at what EA has done with microtransactions, you know, outside of Ultimate Team, the sort of implementation that you can see is the way it works in Tiger Woods, which is that they've got their separate systems. You know, they've got the coin system, and then they've got the XP, and the coin thing is something that you earn when you're playing online, and if you're offline, you don't earn any coins. But you know, whatever. Like, you know, that was for playing. You know, the rounds on the DLC course or whatever, and it didn't affect your progression through the mode, if I recall correctly, through you know your sort of single player career mode. And I think, you know, with EA trying to establish a foothold with Madden in terms of, you know, trying to really take the game in a new direction, but trying to, you know, keep going with what they're doing and do well. I'm with Chris, and then I think they're not going to give people, you know, an excuse to get mad at them to you know, sort of, you know, they're not going to want to draw the ire of the forum. The forum heads on something like this, and that's, you know, that's all they would do with any hint of that.
So to close this out, Brian, do you agree, or do you think there might be even some slight modifications to the way that that Madden would potentially implement microtransactions beyond just staying with Ultimate Team?
I think one of the biggest lessons from 2K14 and then previously the way EA kept microtransactions out of Connected Careers, and which is now Connected Franchise, and they were out in front saying that it wasn't going to be in when people were asking. It wasn't going to be a factor in franchise mode. I think one of the biggest lessons from all this is that you can take microtransactions and put them into a new mode, a new experience, like Ultimate Team, or into My Career mode, where is not necessarily where you're getting complaints of microtransactions. But you can't just push it on to experiences that people have had for years and years, like the current franchise modes. If EA is going to do something more with microtransactions, I think they do that with some kind of brand new mode they introduce, or some kind of new different way to play the game that becomes, again, optional, because Ultimate Team is completely optional. People want to play that mode, they go into it, they know what they're getting with Ultimate Team, as opposed to going into your franchise mode that you've been playing for 15 years, essentially, and learning that here's you're now faced with all these different barriers to success. So I think that's kind of the key there. If EA does it, I think they know that they have to separate it from the experiences that they have now, and make it a totally different, you know, isolate it from everything else like they have with Ultimate Team.
Owen, I was going to say, a thought I had on this the other day is, I wonder when we're going to see Ultimate Team offered separately, if we are. And I think that's going to be sort of the canary in the coal mine for when this stuff is really pushing into, you know, digitally distributed, and sports go into that kind of annual subscription model that I think everyone is future casting. But, you know, I don't think we're there yet. I would say my overall impressions of next generation are sort of like, you know, both in distribution and frankly in the leap in visual quality. It's not been what I thought would be as eye popping, you know, as most people would expect. But that is, I think, the next step for sports. It's like, okay, when you see these microtransaction modes like Ultimate Team offered as a standalone, you know, to hook people in and buy the full game, that's when you're going to see this thing really pushing into a digital model.
Well, all right, gentlemen, I think this was a terrific show. A great way to kick off 2014. And frankly, we can only go downhill from here, right? It's pretty fun. So. But as always, hey, thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Sumit. No thank yous at all to Mike Suzik. Zero.
Zero.
Zero thank yous, Mike Suzik. But seriously, thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it very much. As always, tweet at us, send us emails. Keep all of the feedback coming because it just helps make the show even better. So, on behalf of Brian Weedeye from Pasta Padre, Chris Zanner from Operation Sports, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, and Owen Good from Kotaku, I am Rich Grisham. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes, subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio, look for it on your favorite podcast app, follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast, or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate, review, and comment on it while you're there. That helps us keep the show going. And also make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follow: Joysticks Mike Suzik at Mike Suzik, Kotaku's Owen Good at Owen Good, Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar, Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve underscore OS, Pasta Padre's Brian Weedeye at Pasta Padre, and me, your host, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham, and of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. And as always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every 2 weeks, and we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports, or you, our listeners. Thanks, and we'll see you again really soon.